Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. And if you're hearing that piece of music, you know it's real people in the psychotherapist chair. So welcome to Saturday morning. It's the weekend and we've got Kim Knight with us, who has been brave enough, maybe foolish enough, to sit in the psychotherapist chair. Welcome, Kim.
Hi, Derry. I'm trembling.
Well, you know the deal here. You only have to talk about what you're happy to talk about. There's no requirement that you share anything you don't want to share. So that's the ground rule of this program. Kim, it's lovely to have you here, and I really appreciate your generosity of time. What is it that motivated you to accept the invitation to sit in the psychotherapist chair?
It just sounded interesting. I think, actually, no, I do have an answer to that. Listening to your other episodes and finding them so fascinating, and just hearing the backstory of people and getting real with, you know, what has happened in their lives, I think that's what people always want to hear. And it's often what we don't hear. And especially, for example, with therapists, and we're both therapists, is that people can often look at us and think that we've sorted all our problems because we're out there helping other people. We don't have any problems ourselves anymore. We're these perfect beings in some way. And for me anyway, it's just not the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. Kim, why don't we kick off by you telling me what has happened to you over these last 4 years? What's the last 4 years been like for you?
Yes, it has been quite a roller coaster, like it has been for many people. Some people in a really big way, and some people potentially in a lesser way. But several things come to mind when you ask that question. One, during this whole period, I was going through menopause, and nobody ever teaches you about that. It's completely sort of ignored, really, in society. It's not really much of a spoken topic. It's not talked about. And it is very different for every person. But for me, it was quite an experience, more on a psycho-spiritual level, not so much on a physical level. And for me, it was this shift in perspective of experiencing that instead of seeing most of my life in front of me, most of my life was now behind me. And that was really hard to accept and integrate. I remember sitting at my desk one day, and I think it was probably about a year after the COVID debacle began, and I was watching lots of information and videos, documentaries about what was really going on, and there's a lot of stuff out there on this topic, and I felt very drawn to watch this information, but it was taking so much time. But at the same time, I felt like I needed to watch it for some reason. And I was sitting at my desk thinking, I feel like I have two jobs now. I feel like my whole work life has been shifted dramatically. Prior to that, I was trundling along, just working in my business, seeing clients, running webinars. That was my everyday. And my everyday was no longer. And I just sat there and thought, wow, my whole life has irrevocably changed, and the world has irrevocably changed. And I'm trying to integrate that. And also a recognition of the trauma of the whole situation, how absolutely traumatic it was. On a psychological level, because it was a psyops, but people didn't realize it at the time when it was happening. But just recognizing and feeling the collective trauma, literally, energetically, I could feel that very strongly. So there was a lot to integrate, and it's still ongoing.
I bet there are just so many listeners who are really resonating with what you're describing, Kim, in their own ways. And I think I'm really interested in, do you remember when you became aware that there was, in fact, a violent psychological operation being waged against you? Do you remember when you became aware of that? As I actually can't remember when I became aware, but like you, my eyes were open, the scales fell from my eyes, my brain suddenly found myself facing, you know, misinformation that I'd been fed since a young boy, actually. And it was a tremendous shock for me to suddenly realize that everything I'd trusted and relied on and believed in, not quite everything, but almost everything, was very likely a con.
It's a really great question. I know right from the start, I thought was that what was happening collectively was a mirror to what I've seen happening individually to people when they get sick. And so for years, you know, working with people with chronic fatigue and chronic long-term illnesses, seeing that there was actually a reason for it, that they were getting sick as an end result of not taking care of themselves or unresolved emotional trauma, many, many reasons. And so that when people get a virus, for example, Epstein-Barr virus or ME, the reason that they actually finally collapse, so to speak, is because that's the last straw effect. The body's been tolerating so much stress for such a long time, and finally it takes the person out in an attempt to actually help them. So it's actually a good thing. So the first thing that I thought was, oh, okay, this seems to be a collective version of what's happened, you know, what I've seen individually for others, and that was the same case for myself as well. And then I remember when we had to wear masks and there were all these rules while we were during, you know, in that first lockdown. And I'm quite a, I'm trying to think what the word is, rebellious person. And for me, I was just like, I'm not going to do that. And as soon as I put the mask on, it just felt so horrible anyway. I literally could feel the toxicity of the air that was naturally wanting to get out of my body, because that's what exhalation is. It's the toxins that we don't want in our body leaving our body. And I could immediately notice how absolutely horrible it was to have a mask on when I went to the supermarket for the one and only time wearing a mask. And I could feel like this just isn't right. This can't be healthy. And I took my mask off in the supermarket, and I remember walking around feeling so scared. It was like the stress levels in my body were off the chart. And how ridiculous looking back now. But at the time, you know, everybody's walking around with their masks on, and I don't have it on. And then as soon as you saw somebody, maybe, you know, occasionally with no mask on, you'd smile at them and feel this sense of relief of like, I'm not the only one. So yeah, I can't exactly remember when I thought it was a psyops, but I do, funnily enough, I think maybe it was might have been a year later, maybe 6 months later, I can't remember, but I decided it must have been on the second lockdown, whenever that was. Yes, that's when it was, and I can't remember when that was, but we had that second one. I don't know if that was a year later. And I decided that for that time period, I was going to do a Facebook live video as I was going out for my walk. It was just something to do because I was quite isolated in Queenstown. I was living in a shared house, but the other people went away, so I was by myself. So, you know, I didn't have other people to interact with. So I thought, okay, well, I'll do some interaction on Facebook. So I decided to do a daily live, and it was just something to look forward to. And I thought I'd share some useful piece of information that might help somebody, you know, from, you know, how to deal with a physical issue or an emotional issue or something. And I would often just talk about, well, usually actually just talk about what popped into my head and I felt like sharing in the moment. It was quite spontaneous and intuitive. And one day I thought, I need to talk about sort of psyops type theme. I'm trying to think of what the Matthias Desmet used a word for it, and I'm trying to remember what
mass formation.
Yeah, there was another word, but you get the gist. And I just had this pop into my mind, and I was walking along talking about this. And I just said, you know, this is just a mass psychological operation and people don't realize it and blah, blah, blah. And it was about a week later when Matthias Desmet came out with his video, which went viral. And I thought, isn't that interesting? That just has to be in the collective field of people waking up.
Yeah, absolutely. But what strikes me is your willingness to always share, first of all, as a therapist, what you know, even if you're just, you know, one step ahead, you're willing to share that, you know, whatever you know that might help the client. But also your willingness to speak out, that's always impressed me. And I know that you're doing an amazing talk now on the Safe and Effective tour that you and a few really famous New Zealanders are doing. Do you want to just share briefly what you're doing on that, Kim? I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
Yes. Well, before I do, just to say, you know, that sometimes I wonder if I'm stupid or intelligent the way that I speak out. There's something in me that is drawn to do it. And sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's actually not. You know, it can take quite a lot of courage. Sometimes I think I need to keep my mouth shut. It's hard to tell all the time what's the right thing to do. But this Safe and Effective Roadshow, which is coming to four different cities in November, is all about helping those who are just starting to question the narrative and worry or are concerned or have questions around why they have seemingly inexplicable symptoms, which are still being passed off by doctors as not real. I literally was talking to one of the other speakers last week, Gary Moller, who has seen a lot of vaccine injured people. And he said that there's this sort of new diagnosis now of vaccine anxiety. Maybe it's not new, I'm not sure, but he said, people are going to the doctor and they're saying, I've got all these weird symptoms, there's something not quite right with me. And they're saying, oh, you've got vaccine anxiety, go and see a psychiatrist. And I nearly fell off my chair. And what's so interesting about this is that this is a very common story that I've heard from many, many clients over the years, but obviously in a different vein, where they go to their doctor with symptoms of chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, ME. That's what they've been labelled, of course. Initially, they just go with symptoms and I'm tired and I've got pain and whatever. And so many people are just told, oh, it's in your head. And it's not. You know, these people don't want to be sick. And so it's a similar thing, which is interesting. But the roadshow is about bringing truth and compassion and support to those people, because, I mean, for a start, there are a lot of people who definitely know they've been vaccine injured and they're still suffering and they're still trying to get the support and be heard, because there's so much denial by the medical system and the government and the media still. And then there are those people who don't know, but they've got symptoms. One of the things that I've sort of stood on my soapbox for many years now is how conditioned we have become and been by the prevailing medical system to believe in the authority predominantly of the doctor. And I don't have anything against doctors. I think they do amazing work and we need them. We need surgeries, we need some medication. But the point is that we have been so programmed without even realizing it for literally decades. And this is what I'm going to be talking about in the talk, because the talk is called the Hidden History of Medicine. And it goes back to, you know, 150 years to when medicine really was set up. I mean, it goes back further than that, but that's where I'm going back to, because it's just a good point to start. And because this conditioning and programming has been going on, and literally worldwide, especially in the Western world, not so much obviously in, you know, Africa or the Amazon or somewhere like that. But this conditioning to trust and believe that the doctor knows best is so deeply ingrained in us, even through previous generations, that initially we don't question it. And this is one of the reasons why natural health practitioners are not taken seriously. And it really, really annoys me, I have to say, because I too was one of those people until my early 20s, when I had all I knew growing up was you go to the doctor, you have surgery, you get medication, and that is the solution for illness.
Yeah.
You never get really asked why the problem is there. It's just trying to solve the end result, which is typically called the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. And so that was my reality. That was my normal. That was my whole family's normal. And of course, when something is normal, you don't even question it until something forces you to question it. So the thing that forced me to question it was when I was around, I think it was about 27, I was cleaning the windows in my flat in London, and I twisted my back quite aggressively. And I didn't really realize I'd done anything at the time because I was very unconscious and disconnected from my body. I did feel it and sort of hear it even, but I didn't really clock it fully. But over the next 3 months, I found that my back was getting stiffer and stiffer and I couldn't bend down. And then one day I was trying to put a sock on and I couldn't. And I thought to myself, this can't be right, you know. So I did go to the doctor and they couldn't find anything wrong, which is very, very typical for people with lots of different symptoms. And they said, there's nothing wrong. We can't find anything wrong. So we can't help you. But here I was, you know, not being able to function very well. So that was when I started looking in the Yellow Pages, which we had back then in the UK, which you'll remember, and somehow found my way to an osteopath. And that was the very first natural health practitioner that I ever heard of or went to. And the first thing that this guy said to me was, well, you shouldn't have left it so long because now your body's compensated and set in, you know, with compensatory behaviors, etc. But, you know, we can still help you. And he did. But that was my first introduction to something different. And then later through the years, I've tried hundreds of therapies and trained in many. So my perspective is very, very different now. But coming back to the roadshow, the whole point is to help people really understand what's going on. But it is a massive, massive topic. I could say that I could easily talk about it for 6 years, like a 6-year degree, and I'm trying to do something in 30 minutes. But hopefully I will, what I want to do is share the bits that woke me up, the bits where I went, oh my God,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Is that true? I can't believe that.
Nice.
And I remember this one person, because I'm basically going to be sharing what other people, you know, what I've learned from other people. I haven't, it's none of this is my information. I'm just disseminating it in a hopefully a succinct way. Is I remember I was listening to one guy, his name's Kenneth Cousins, and he talks a lot about the founding of the judiciary system, the monetary system, religion. And he had this suite of videos. There were 17 in this particular series, and I got to the third one, and all of a sudden my psyche just felt completely overwhelmed, and I was like, I don't think I can take any more of this. I can't, if I believe what he's saying, then my paradigm and my belief about what life is about will no longer be what it was.
Wow.
And I just don't know if I can handle that. And I went to bed that night. I thought, oh, I'm not going to look at any of those for another 2 weeks at least.
Yeah.
And then I must have integrated overnight. And I woke up the next morning. I'm like, right, I'm ready for number four. And I carried on.
That quickly.
Yeah. But this is something I'm going to be talking about as well. It's called in sort of spiritual circles, if you like, or personal development circles, it's called a ring pass knot experience. So I don't know if you've heard about a ring pass knot.
No, can you explain that and say it again?
Yeah.
It's called what?
A ring pass knot.
A ring?
Ring pass knot.
Is that a nautical knot?
No, a knot, N-O-T.
Oh, it's, not, it's not a K-N-O-T.
No, it's not a K. N-O-T. Yeah.
So, a ring pass knot.
Yes. So this is something that I learned about 20 years ago from a lady called Michaela Smallwright, who is a science and nature researcher. She's quite out there for a lot of people. She'd be quite out there.
What was her name again?
Michaela Smallwright.
Michaela Smallwright, yeah.
And she set up a nature research sanctuary in the US. She's from the US. And I read all her books. And in one of her books, she was talking about if some of the information that you're going to read in this book is going to take you beyond your ring pass knot. Ring pass knot is a sort of a circumference around one's consciousness or psyche. It's a boundary that is there for safety. It's there to protect the safety of what information can we assimilate without us going into overwhelm, or even worse, so to speak, if it was really too much. And she said this ring pass knot is there for a good reason, and you need to honor it and respect it. And I think this is what is happening a lot with a lot of people who can't understand what is going on at the moment, is that their ring pass knot is there protecting them. And that's fine. It's there for a reason. But what happens is sometimes when new information comes in, it's because it needs to come in. It's time for us to see something differently. And the way that she explains this ring pass knot and consciousness is she says that only the information that you're ready to hear or receive or understanding will be inside the circumference. So imagine it's like a Swiss ball. You know, you've got the information that you can understand or assimilate or comprehend inside it, and the rest of reality is outside the bounds of that Swiss ball. But occasionally that Swiss ball will be expanded a bit more, and so a bit more of reality will be inside the circumference. And sometimes we can have quite big ring pass knot expansions, but the really big ones only happen maybe once in our life or occasionally in our life, because they take a lot of integration to complete. They can be really, really unsettling. And so I knew what she was talking about when I started reading it, because I had a massive ring pass knot expansion when I was 28. Which interestingly is the Saturn return. So I had a very, very, very intense ring pass knot expansion, which at the time, the mainstream medical community, they never voiced it to me in such words, but it was what was considered a nervous breakdown. But as I pieced it together later, I recognized that I'd had a transformation of consciousness, and that had been a massive ring pass knot expansion, because my soul or psyche, whatever, had said, this is time. This is time for you to become a different person, to understand life on a different level. And if I hadn't had that, I wouldn't be able to understand everything that I've learned and studied over the last 20, 30 years. It was necessary.
Well, what you're sharing, Kim, is a complete paradigm shift in the way that we consider depression. You're saying, actually, it's not a disease. It's not a molecule or some fault in my makeup. It's actually a growth point.
Depression is the depressing of emotions. You know, people are not facing their feelings. You know, they're not able to face the traumas and the feelings that they're suppressing as a result of those traumas. And when we avoid and suppress our feelings, then we're depressing them. And that can turn into this sensation of depression where everything's just really raw and foggy. And we're suppressing not just the bad feelings, but also the good feelings. So that was very much true for me anyway, but I've also seen it with clients over and over again. It just has stood the test of time that there's a lot of truth in that. But not everybody has to reach a breakdown. But part of the reason that I did end up there was because at the time, just around this time, I was in a new relationship. And this person, I didn't understand it at the time, because often we don't until later, but he had some real sort of psychological problems. And of course, we had attracted each other to each other because I had problems, he had problems, you know, like attracts like, or the, you know, law of attraction, etc. And there was a part of me that felt very, very uncomfortable with him. And one of the things that, as a result of that, was I couldn't sleep. So I wasn't sleeping. And the reason that I finally ended up in hospital was I had 3 days of just no sleep. And I was a wreck. Mm. Yeah.
That'll do it. Yeah. Wow. Well, this is a very interesting discussion. And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Real People with me, Jerry Pives. And I'm talking to Kim Knight down here in the South Island. Who else is on the platform with you, Kim?
Yeah, there are some really great speakers that I'm looking forward to listening to. There's Linda Wharton from the Health Forum, and she's always a great speaker. And her knowledge and research into the statistics of what has gone on these past 4 years is incredible. It's a full-time job for her now, unpaid. And there's Dr. Matt Shelton, Matt Shelton, I'm not sure if he has a doctor in front of his name anymore, and Alison Goodwin from NZD SOS. There's Gary Moller, who's a forensic health practitioner in terms of getting to the root cause of things through hair analysis, and he's a very interesting character. Dr. Emmanuel Garcia, let me just think, Guy Hatchard. Actually, one other person that I'm really looking forward to hearing is Barry Duffield, who is best known for his role in Spartacus. And so here he was, this hunk of an actor who found himself bedridden in hospital after his vaccine injury. So he's going to be sharing his story. And also there's a holistic dentist who's going to be sharing with people how they can best take care of their health, because apparently a lot of the anesthetics now are introducing the mRNA technology, which has got a lot of people worried. And then there's a couple of lawyers speaking as well, Ken Nicholson and Liz Lambert. But the dates are between the 9th and the 15th of November. So it starts in Dunedin on the 9th. It moves up to Queenstown on the 11th, then Nelson on the 13th, and then Wellington on the 15th.
Now, just that list alone is exciting, and it gets me drooling with excitement at coming along and hearing all of these people together and meeting up with fellow souls who are asking questions, right, who are either wondering about it or wanting to meet people who have been traveling this incredibly brave and courageous path that Matt and Alison and all these people, and we've had so much help from these people. It's just lovely to have them all coming together. Just run those dates one more time, because I want to make sure which one I can get to see.
Okay, so Dunedin on the 9th, and people better double check this because I'm not looking at the website as I say this, but it is the 9th to the 15th. So Dunedin is first, I think, on the 9th, Queenstown on the 11th, Nelson on the 13th, and Wellington on the 15th of November.
Awesome. And what website do they go to find out and book themselves in?
They go to roadshow24.nz.
Roadshow24.nz. Super.
Yes, very simple.
Okay, well, look, thank you. This has been great. I want to come back to you. I mean, you've been sharing you beautifully all the way through, Kim. And what you've described is really a period in the last 3 or 4 years in which you've gone through a lot. You were talking about the ring pass not sort of moment where you had to, as it were, just stop and then assimilate and then get yourself in a state where you could then proceed.
The one thing I would say is to really honor where one is at and to go slowly. And if at any stage one feels overwhelmed or it's too much, then walk away or don't go there, because there's a lot of information that, you know, it's typically referred to as rabbit holes. You know, there's a lot of rabbit holes in this COVID debacle.
And I've heard doom scrolling as well.
Right. Yes. Yes. And there are a lot of different avenues and a lot of different topics that all interlink. If you go up, you know, I always like to say, if you go up in a helicopter and look down, or even bigger, you go up above the earth in a spaceship and look down, everything is interconnected. But down on the ground, we can go down these various rabbit holes. And for me, some of these rabbit holes, I can't go down them. I've heard about them. I've heard little snippets about them, but they're too much for me because I'm a very sensitive soul. And so I honor that and I don't go there. And if there's too much fear coming up, then it's a good sign. Maybe don't go down there. Sometimes, yes, we need to go, you know, feel a little bit of fear and go beyond, but sometimes not.
There is a peculiarly addictive nature to it as well, isn't there? Like, I've got to find out more. I've got to find out more. I've got to find out more. You described that really beautifully earlier on.
Yes, and that's the tricky thing, is discerning when is the right time to be looking at this stuff and when not. I can't give really a fully definitive answer on that.
No, that's a very interesting issue, isn't it?
Yes, you've just got to do what feels right.
It makes me think of scratching a wound, you know, that when wounds are healing, they itch and you just want to scratch them, but then you make them worse if you do.
But, you know, I had very early on, I mean, this is probably within the first 6 months, I was posting a lot on Facebook the whole way through. Initially, even though I thought that COVID was real, I still wasn't in agreement with, you know, how the authorities were dealing with it. And I was posting a lot. And then when they started talking about the, I don't know, the mandates and the vaccine and the whatever, I was, you know, continued to post. And I had one colleague who, it was clear on the post that she was writing that she was pro-vaccine and pro-government and pro this and that. And I was quite surprised, because I've known her for quite some time, and she's, you know, interested in natural health and spirituality and that sort of thing. And I just was quite surprised that she was seeing things the way she was seeing them. But I didn't say anything, but I just observed. And then one day I got this amazing message from her saying, I just want to thank you so much for persisting with your posts, because I have just seen the light.
Wow.
I have just seen things completely differently. I don't know why I didn't see it before, but I just absolutely get everything that you've been saying.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was just, it was really nice to have that, because, you know, a lot of the times when I post it, I think, oh, should I post this? Should I keep my mouth shut? And, you know, it just happened today. I posted a post on Facebook on a couple of groups in Queenstown about the roadshow. And, you know, there's a little hesitancy, little nervousness in me. Okay, I'm going to get some backlash here. You know, I'm going to get told I'm a conspiracy theorist and this. And I really tried to write it well so that I would avoid that. And, you know, I'll wait for the comments to come in. But the two first comments that have come in have been really positive, and they both said, thank you for talking about this. People need to talk about it more.
Beautiful.
Which is really great.
Are you sure you're not suffering from COVID anxiety, Kim?
Probably.
Yeah, you might as well say someone's suffering from, you know, green grass anxiety or open sky anxiety or walking on your feet anxiety. It's as absurd as that, isn't it? We're talking about the edge, aren't we? We're talking about the edge of our communication. We're talking about the edge of what we can tolerate internally. We're also talking about the edge of what we can talk to others about, and how we have to be so careful these days about both of those, about what we can handle ourselves and paying attention to what we think other people can handle. But that last post that you described about where someone said, thank you, because now I've realized that that is going to be a little ray of sunshine, I believe, to many of our listeners who've worked so hard to speak out the truth. They've stood out. They've been courageous. Our listeners are probably some of the most courageous people in the whole of New Zealand, in my humble opinion, my IMHO. And it's like, sometimes it's really important to hear a little bit of hope in that, that we keep speaking, we retain as much respect as we can, we keep it as unprovocative as we can manage, but we continue to speak out in the hope that maybe just one or two people can realize and take action to heal themselves or protect themselves. I think that's a beautiful story, Kim.
Yes, well, as you're talking, what came to mind was that I really do feel that what has happened has been a collective trauma and a collective abuse. Again, a mirror of what can happen individually to somebody. And I've worked a lot with people who have experienced childhood trauma and abuse, and that was why they ended up getting ill. And the trouble, and I know that you know this topic probably even better than me, but the trouble with being traumatized and abused is that initially we don't recognize it. It's just our normal. And I remember reading recently somewhere that the people who have been or were abused and experienced trauma as children but have worked through it, they're the ones who are noticing this collective version that's going on much quicker than other people. And it's just so fascinating that when we're in an abusive relationship, we don't initially know it. We're just in confusion. It's maybe our norm. We maybe don't even question it. And, you know, this is what I went through in my early 30s when I was in this abusive relationship, which I had no idea it was an abusive relationship when it started.
Take your time.
Sorry. And I just knew that something didn't feel right. It was like I'd have thoughts in my head and I'd be making excuses in my head, but my heart would not be feeling good and my gut would be, you know, work out what's going on. But back then I didn't know that. And so I was just in confusion and exhausted the whole time. And that's what this psychological operation has been. It literally is a psyops. And then when I was in this relationship, I mean, it really was wearing me down. And then one day I was watching an Oprah show. I used to love watching Oprah. And she was interviewing this woman who had been in a horrific abusive relationship, which I won't even repeat the things that her husband made her do. It was the worst things that you could ever imagine. And one of the audience members sort of shouted out and said, well, why didn't you leave? Because she did eventually leave, which was why she was on the show, but it took her 10 years to find the courage to leave. And so this audience member said, well, why didn't you leave earlier? And she hadn't even answered. The woman hadn't even answered, but I'd answered in my head because I was exactly in that position. And it was like, because she was too scared. Because I knew for myself the reason I hadn't left was because I was really scared. I was scared. He was a big guy. He might come and harm me. I was scared. But anyway, that really helped me to sort of see the light, so to speak, and understand why I was trapped in the relationship and why I hadn't left. And then the other thing that really, really helped me turn the corner, so to speak, was I came across this book in the library completely unexpectedly. It literally just about dropped off the shelf into my hands. And I'd always been saying in my head, it's like living with Jekyll and Hyde. One minute they're nice, one minute they're a monster. One minute they're nice, one minute they're a monster. And I picked this book off the shelf and I hadn't even really noticed the title of the book, but for some reason I put the book off the shelf and I opened it up and it was open at a chapter heading called Jekyll and Hyding. And I was like, what? And I started reading it and it was like I was reading about my life in this book. And I snuck it out because I knew that I couldn't let him see it. And I read it, and that was like, oh my God, I'm in an abusive relationship. And that would, and then I was like, okay, right, it's time to leave now. And I think that, you know, they say that the world at large is a collective mirror of what happens to, you know, individually for each person in the world. It's just a collective version of individuals, which makes sense. And a lot of people have got a lot of trauma, and you know that more than anyone. And we're a traumatized people, and that is showing up collectively. And people need to recognize that. They need to recognize their own personal trauma and move through it and heal it, which is not easy. It's not something that happens overnight. And actually by doing that, we will actually heal in large part collectively. But the first part, personally, I don't know what you think, but I think the very first step in healing trauma is to recognize it's actually happening, because we don't recognize it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The way you described being caught in something and not knowing it, it really touched my heart, Kim, and it reminded me of so many situations in my own life as well. It hit me like viscerally. It hit me right in the chest, in the heart area. And it was like, oh my God, you're just describing the torture of not understanding, but having this feeling of something just not right, just not right, just not right. There's this kind of instinct of something's wrong, and I just can't pin it down. And I think you've just described more eloquently than anyone I think I've talked to what the people who are putting their hands over their ears and going, they don't want to hear any facts. They don't want to hear any research. They don't want to hear anything at all. They cannot tolerate this information because they have this real terror. And you describe the terror of leaving. We need to understand, like those of us that have had any trauma and then woken up for it, we need to understand the intense discomfort of the unawareness. And not only that, but the way in which these people who are not able to face, understandably, the truth of what's actually going on here, that the vaccine was not safe, that government has not been here to protect us, that we could just go on and on. How the reality of the myth, the delusion that we've been fed by media, by government agencies, by education, the culture of the great god of white-coated medicine that we must bow down to, you know, all of this is reinforcing the terror of breakdown. Because if I shift out of this particular, if you like, this particular ring pass knot, if I cannot go beyond, my ring pass knot is strangling me, actually. If that ring pass knot gets so small that it's literally strangling me because I can't face reality, those of us that are awake to what is happening on need to replay what you just described, Kip, because I think you described so perfectly the terror, the discomfort, the suffering of people that, I mean, look, it's horrible to face the truth, but it's actually far more horrible not to know the truth, right? And to be a victim of it and somehow thinking, I'm confused. At least those of us that are facing the truth, we might be horrified, we might be overwhelmed, we might be in tears at the harm that is being done to humanity. But at least we're grounded in a reality. And I think that understanding the worst horror of going through all of that, almost unconsciously knowing something is wrong, instinctively knowing that something is wrong, and yet not being able to do anything about it, being trapped, but not knowing why I'm trapped or how I'm trapped. Well, if you're listening, you're listening to Kim Knight talking on Real People in the Psychotherapist Chair. We're really talking about a lot of really important stuff. And don't let this be your last chance to hear Kim, because, you know, go to that website and book in and continue the conversation with Kim, because this subject is so important. The subject that you're speaking on and the other speakers are all speaking on really important issues. Don't miss this one. It's called Safe and Effective. And the website you go to, I didn't write it down, Kim, give it me again.
Roadshow24.nz.
Thank you, roadshow24.nz. And Kim, we're coming to the end of our time together, and I feel like we've only just got going. I feel like the engine's revving up and we're diving into some really good stuff. But one of the purposes of this program is to find out how the people I interview cope with stress and trauma. What works for you? How do you cope best? What are the tools that you use when you know you're under the cosh and you've been doom scrolling for too much, or you've just got overwhelmed, or yeah, what works for you, Kim?
One of the most important things I learned along the way from my first Qigong teacher, where he said that the thing that emotions most need is to be validated. He said, thoughts are rational, emotions are irrational, and you can't think your feelings away. That was just life-changing for me when I heard that. And I've done so much learning and training on how to self-manage emotions. So that is one side of it. The other side of it is Qigong, which I came across nearly 25 years ago now, is a mainstay in my life. And one of the core lessons that we learn is that our natural state is to be very happy and joyful and peaceful and calm. That is, in fact, our natural state. Mm. And if ever we're not feeling that and we notice that, then we know that we've lost our natural state and we need to do whatever we need to do to restore the natural state.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And so we have Qigong practices to be able to do that. And the system that I'm using at the moment is called Ren Shui. But basically, it has a suite of techniques, so to speak, for helping one to bring oneself into this natural state. And when we do that, then the body automatically goes into a self-healing mode, because the body knows how to heal itself. But if it's in the stress mode, it can't do it. It can't do the healing. So we have to bring ourselves into the parasympathetic mode, into that natural healing state, and then the self-healing mechanisms of the body automatically switch on. But those are my go-tos, and they work.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, don't go away, because we're going to take a break now, and I'm going to play some music, and then we're going to come back and hear, I think, a little bit more of Kim's journey through four pieces of music that she's chosen. I call it music with meaning. And to get us in the groove for a shift into something different, shake out, you know, move around the room, dance a bit, because we're going to play one of my favorite pieces of music, and it's by the Doobie Brothers, and it's called, guess what? Listen to the Music.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.